against it made it summer. His wife couldn't have children, but against it had it done. I get lucky to be recognized.
Who was the mother?
I don't make sure. At any rate, this boy's birth was registered in Eugene Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
And Stone had gotten wind of this, so he came out to my mother and gave her a list of questions and advised my stepmother, who was a lawyer. He said, well, give you the questions first. And they were discussing whether that should be, whether she should say that she knew of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepfather said, when it comes to history, I believe in the pure light of truth. That I think there was a big enough time so that we did indeed have a son out of wedlock whom he supported and whom he saw. I really don't think this is going to impact anything from there to the public. He said, if I were in that position and someone were inviting my life after I said I didn't take it,
mm-hmm.
and I think he had a point there.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't mean that you have to dwell on every small sordid detail. This is a scandal, Martin, it's not the same thing. But those things which have to do with the makeup of character,
mm-hmm.
as it relates to whatever place they have occupied, I think it's true.
Yeah, I think it's very important, I mean, to know what kind of relationships people had and what kind of women managed to become as successful as your mother, because there weren't very many of them. And, you know, and what kind of lives are they?
Well, of course, I have my own theory about my mother, and that's this. There were three girls, the other two were big and small.
You know, there wasn't homeless.
Was lonely. No.
I haven't seen many pictures of her.
She was not everybody's cup of tea, but as a child and mm-hmm. as an adolescent,
mm-hmm.
she was a long, stringy, mm-hmm. sunburned,
mm-hmm.
plain girl. Whereas my other two aunts, one of them was little and medicated and very cute,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was tall and also a handsomer person, at least according to the face of that time,
mm-hmm.
than my mother. I think my mother had one thing which was very important. I think she had a tremendous mother obsession,
mm-hmm.
which is quite understandable, because my grandfather, much like Gibbs, was one of those people who inspire such love
mm.
and such respect and have such warmth
mm-hmm.
that both men and women, an extraordinary person. My father absolutely worshipped
him. Mm-hmm.
Yes, because my own theory was that my mother grew up with near people.
Was she a tomboy, sort of?
Oh, gosh. Well, they all were.
Well, they lived on a farm.
They lived on a ranch. They rode bareback. They hunted. They were all cowboys. But the thing is that when they got to be 18, 19, 20 years old, the other two girls were very pretty,
mm-hmm.
which mother was not.
Mm-hmm.
Later, she really developed.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a very beautiful, tall, slender, very beautiful body.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful carriage and lovely hands and feet.
Mm-hmm.
And she became, in a way, quite lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when she wasn't pretty anymore, she was so distinguished.
Well, yeah.
That as she grew older, she lost them. But I think in the meantime, one of the things that gave her this tremendous pride and the excessive demand that she made on people,
mm-hmm.
I think, may have had its roots in her being the ugly duckling and this necessity to excel, the
mm-hmm.
necessity to be outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, this is...
Was she the youngest?
She was the youngest.
The eldest.
She was the eldest. And as I say, she was not a pretty girl. And of course, she really grew up until she was a teenager. Quite isolated. They used to go, you know, to the next farm up 15 or 20 miles to
mm.
dances and corn huskings and that sort of thing. But whereas my other two aunts were, I'm sure, the belle of the territory, mm. not a
Mm.
And I think that this was one of the things that may have spurred her on to achieve something on her own account. And then I think also she was greatly influenced by my grandfather and my grandmother, who had extremely progressive ideas
mm-hmm.
and social relations and war. And I mean, they were pretty progressive people.
Mm-hmm.
So she found herself in a new, and of course she was one of the earliest. And I think Baranoff, the homely girl, does develop her charm.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be something there to begin with. But I think that she knows she's not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that, she will have more tendency to develop real grace and charm than a girl who starts out very pretty because she really doesn't know anything.
Yeah. And then they moved to St. Louis when she was 18, I think?
They moved to Kansas City.
So.
They moved to Kansas City, and that was when she started working on the newspaper. And in the course of her working on the newspaper, she had to work in a machine shop.
Yeah, you tell me that on the phone. That seems so amazing that she would do that.
Oh, she would. Mother was very clever with her
hands. And she was diagnosing around with machines.
She was diagnosing around with machines.
Because that must have been a really unheard of thing for a woman to do.
Well, of course, that was one reason she did.
But her parents didn't.
No.
Object in any way.
Absolutely.
I mean, they didn't think she was ruining her chances to get married or anything like that.
They were not startled by it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother was a very remarkable person and a person who did what she wanted to do. Her romance with my grandfather was a beautiful thing. She was, it was after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents, and my grandfather's parents, settled in Kansas Territory. My grandfather and his father had fought on the Union side. My grandmother
mm-hmm.
And her father had been a colonel
mm-hmm.
on the Confederate side, and he was still feeling. And grandmother's mother was the diehard Southerner, you know,
mm-hmm.
still fighting the Civil War. So my grandfather, I'm sure, was probably interested in my grandmother, which he felt that he would be unwelcome and afraid of the situation that my mother got her coming on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to be hers. And she told me the story of her getting on this pony because she was a beautiful rider.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a skill, I mean, it was not an art thing, it was a skill.
Mm-hmm.
She got on this pony, watching for my grandfather with a pair of field glasses, started driving along the road, and she knew there was a place where there was a soft shoulder,
mm-hmm.
and when he was 20 or 30 feet behind her, she got herself thrown by her horse.
How did she do it? Kick the horse?
And if someone's directly back at you, they really can't see what's happening.
Uh-huh.
And she got herself unloaded by the horse. And she lay there, presumably in a dead faint.
How did she hide the field glass?
Well, everybody who rode out of the prairie always had their knapsacks and a canteen and a sandwich and whatever bread they were in there.
Pretty smart.
So, my grandfather, and she didn't feel strong enough to ride the pony all by herself.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't get back on it.
Did he know that? That was what really happened?
Of course not.
I mean, afterwards? Or did she ever tell?
She told him. He laughed. It's no secret. I'm sure she told him probably early in their marriage. At any rate, she was much too weak to get on the pony and go back home. So she got on the horse with my grandfather. And of course, there's only one way to sit on the horse with another person.
Right.
So this established the rapport.
And
his father, and her father, as a matter of fact, and my grandfather very much, they were very, very good friends.
So there was no problem with their getting married?
No problem with her father. There was always a problem with her mother who never spoke to her.
Ever? Even after they got married?
My great-grandfather, Colonel Thompson, died when quite young. When probably my grandmother was about 30 years old in the first day of their marriage. And of course, a ranch isn't much use unless there's someone to run it, and he didn't make that much.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother's mother came and lived with my grandfather and my grandfather, and she never spoke to
him. Well, how terrible. It must have been horrible for yourself.
If there was some message it had to be sent, she would say, "Would you tell that man my daughter married that?"
How could they stand there looking at it? It sounds unbearable.
Well, my grandfather was a very patient, very slow-spoken boy. And I think he probably felt very sorry for her. She was apparently quite a belligerent character. She spent all of the time teaching them the kind of manners that she needed to talk, dumping them on the head with a thimble.
That must have been terribly appropriate to the territory.
Oh, they were quite appropriate to the territory. In fact, my grandfather, when he married my grandmother, my mother was born in a slum house, which, by the way, is a very good place to be born on the plains of Kansas.
It's cool.
Cool.
Mm.
It's cool in summer. And hers was very elegant in the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But that was their first home.
What was the floorboard?
Which, of course, every bit of wood had to be trucked in on it. It was very, very expensive.
There were no trees at all on the farm.
No trees at all.
Did people plant
trees? And they had no sawmills.
Yeah.
So what they would do would be to start out with sodding.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them had hard pack. There's something called gumbo out in Kansas and Oklahoma, which packs like cement.
It's dirt, though.
It's dirt,
mm-hmm.
but it dries as hard as cement. So what they did would be to have an earth floor,
mm-hmm.
and then they would have raindrops covering it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had windows. A sandy is about so big, you know.
The wall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What they do is to take, well, you know the way they start lawns.
Yeah.
They take the whole earth,
mm-hmm.
together with the roots and the grasses. And each one of them is about so thicker than the grass. Well, in order for it to be thoroughly stable and sound,
mm-hmm.
they would cut them, you know, right straight down, about so wide, yep. and then lay them like bricks.
Oh, so they're stacked. They're not standing
up.
Oh,
they're stacked. No. Oh, no, they're stacked.
I was wondering how they could stand up.
Like layers of a pine.
Mm-hmm. And then the weight presses them down.
And the weight presses them down. And when they get the first one without much weight, they, I guess, put boards on top and wham them down or wet them down or something like that. But in any event, they just keep building without any wood at all except the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And they would build the sabi of 8 or 10 feet, depending on how many people were helping and how ambitious they were, to have as high a ceiling as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have for the roof, then they would have these 2x4s.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they were necessarily quite small because it's quite an undertaking. And they were always looked on as being something temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't bring them sobbing. And, of course, if the cattle come through and start out with a very small spread, and if they were lucky, a large one could be made out of it. But a good husbandman could do very well indeed. They would buy and or breed and then take their cattle to Dodge, their new cattle.
They would drive them or take them to the railroad?
They were driven to the railroad division point.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be very profitable, and it wasn't more than, maybe 2 or 3 years that my grandfather made no money, so that he could put up a good sound house with real window glass, which was quite something, porches and a pot in the kitchen and certain bedding to go out to the well. But as I said, so my grandmother said that was her mother, that she, still fighting the Civil War, outraged at the idea of her daughter marrying a Yankee renegade who, worst of all, had a lot of Southern blood. This was what the person was saying, that him from Kentucky and Virginia. Maybe he'd been a northerner from Pennsylvania, wouldn't have been so bad.
Yeah, but he was a traitor.
But he was a traitor to the court.
Had she come from a ruling class family or a slave owning family in the South?
Yeah. It was quite well to do that. It wasn't too hard to be a slave owner in those days, as you know.
Yeah.
And the family had been quite well to do, and socially quite fond of them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after the Civil War, they had better than had nothing. So Colonel Thompson came out of Kansas, and that effect did be bad, but actually, they didn't have the sabe for the country that my grandfather, who had gone out much earlier and had more or less grown up the country because of the it's a way of life. It takes a lot of skill.
It's a different kind of farming from the South.
Of course, it's a very different kind of farming. It's dry farming.
Mm.
And you're both handling the cattle and such and that sort of thing. It's a very chancy sort of thing. It's great skill.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And of course they were pacifists.
Were they religious?
No.
Were they anti-religious?
No. They had synthetic religion, I have, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Probably they hoped there was a God, they weren't convinced that there was,
mm-hmm.
and didn't feel that religion was certainly common. They were extremely liberal. I mean, they believed that you can take what you want to believe, or
mm-hmm.
could believe. But they were extremely tolerant of all other people's opinions, and I think anyone who has grown up in pioneer conditions ought to become a very astute and very wise opinion of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother, for example, was an extraordinarily energetic and resourceful woman. She was literally the physician for the whole scientific community.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
She performed surgical operations. She made, on their honeymoon, my parents went out to the ranch, and my father, the darling, offered to chop some wood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what about the chopping wood. Something you ought to know how to do.
Mm, you mean you can't just do it?
And just do it, but he thought he could just do it. And he went out and he was chopping hardwood with, of course, a beautifully honed axe. He'd taken care of that, being a great mechanic. And he came down and a chip of oak, or a birch, which is very hard, flew up and cut his nose off. It was hanging by a thread. My mother, for probably the only time in her life, that it saved a dead away. Fortunately, my grandmother was there. She took his nose. She washed the area around. She put it back in place, and she took, you know, the skin on the inside of an egg?
Mm-hmm.
When you break an egg,
yeah,
the membrane.
Yeah, that little white membrane.
She took this membrane and put his nose back in place. And put several layers of it and made the shell.
And it stuck on because of the egg white, I suppose.
Of course. And of course the inside of the egg is sterile, too.
Yeah. Wow,
and
that's
healthy,
brilliant.
He was a very healthy man.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it was clean.
Yeah.
And he had this tiny, tiny little scar.
That's it.
No stitches.
That's
no
really brilliant.
But this was my best idea without.
She just figured it out, or that was something she knew about? Or?
I don't know where she heard about it.
I mean, I just wonder if that's the kind of folk medicine thing people know about it.
I never heard of anyone doing that before, did you?
No, but I don't know anything about, you know, that kind of medicine either.
Well, it was the kind of thing that people did in the banks would
backwards.
And also, she was completely fearless.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, you know, diphtheria was a great killer of children,
mm-hmm.
and apparently she was immune to it.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, when there was, you know, there's a membrane that forms in the throat, and if there's any possibility, it strangles.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's any possibility of saving a child, that membrane is done.
So like, that's when they cut a little slit in the trachea.
They do a tracheotomy on them now.
Yeah.
Well, of course, my grandmother didn't do a tracheotomy, but what she did, she was a very tiny woman.
Mm-hmm.
And very small, baby hands and feet, and tiny, you know, small fingers. She would just reach her little finger in and catch it and tear it.
God, that's really nice.
I don't know where she got this knowledge of medicine. It could have been from the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been things that farm people knew, but. I know she had a favorite breeding duck or something like that. It was a fowl of some sort. and through some accidents, the galleys passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandmother just took it and washed it down and sewed it up. Nothing ever daunted her.
Was she friendly with the Indians?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, my grandmother had not been Indian.
Oh, really? From being from the South?
Oh, well, the Southerners married Indians.
Yes.
Make no mistake about it. It came from her father's side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that old Colonel Thompson was a border Indian, Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, they were in Virginia before they went out to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But Mother said that he was a very handsome man. He looked very Indian.
Mm-hmm.
He was very tall and slender and had an apple nose and the high cheekbones.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother showed that they were going to meet with the high cheekbones. She was tiny.
Mm-hmm.
She and he knew who we are now. That's about the other side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
But their grandmother had a lot of big blood. And she had, I don't know whether it was because of living with the Indians or her Indians. But she was one of the most stoical women in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Her stoicism was magnificent. And her self-control. She broke her hip when she was about 62 years old. In those days, when you broke your hip at 62, you were in bed for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what they told her. But she was bound and determined that she was going to get on her feet. So, later, when she was my granddaughter, that when she was about her early 70s, I would say she didn't have most of her eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
She had to come back to glaucoma and they
didn't
know how to treat it in those days. So she had been blind for a number of years. But for one who becomes blind and when they're elderly, she could sew beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
She used to quilt things.
After she was blind?
Yes, after she was blind. And when she was living with us in Girard, where she died, we had a maid in my head. My aunt was the housekeeper, but I was supposed to do the dishes and was supposed to be good for my soul. Well, the last thing that last girl wants to do is dishes.
Yeah.
You know, cook or other than not do dishes. So my grandmother would always wait for the rest of the family to collate it, and she'd say, I'll come out and talk to you right away. She would sit there washing the dishes. I'd drive them. I didn't want to get my hands all full of dishes. But she could wash dishes, put them away. We didn't make any special arrangements in the house. I suppose things tended to be in the same place, but the four children in the house, they weren't always in the same place. But she managed to get flipped. The only thing that you could do was read, of course.
Yeah.
But I would read to her, my brother would read to her. And then she got some sort of transformation. There was my mother with all the sending her out to Kansas City to a good hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get home enough. My eyes hurt me because of the sense. I became blind from glaucoma. And it's really time for me to go. Now, will you please just leave me in peace?
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't shut that head.
What's that going to do?
And right up, and I remember one thing that I thought was very indicative of her character before she had this acute condition. I had been looking forward to the soft bone.
Mm-hmm.
And she had maybe even danced for me in my life. And then he showed me she was going to die, and the doctor said that she was going to die. So of course my aunt said, well, you can't go to a dance when your mother lies down, and my grandmother heard it. She said, I've never heard anything so silly in my life. But she's going to go to the dance. She's been looking forward to it for weeks, and she's gotten new dress for it, and she'll be going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that was the Indian influence.
Mm.
He never dreamed that she was Indian.
Mm.
Because she probably knew, she probably heard from the doctor who wasn't Indian. So that's okay.
Right. Was she proud of your mother?
And the tragedy of it was that my father was not
good. You mean he was jealous of her influence over your mother's?
No, not my mother. Well, in the first place, my grandmother was a very decisive person, and I think possibly he may have carried over the resentment that he wouldn't admit.
Mm-hmm.
But she was not the kind of person that my mother was. She was a much more thoughtful and a much kinder and more imaginative person than my mother was. But I think she was very much a doer.
Mm-hmm.
Not a termagant, not a scold, although I understand that in her early days she was quite a character. When I knew her, of course, she was mellow, and she was very gentle and very kind and feisty.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my father may have resented her, perhaps, because he saw, or he felt, something in her that was like my mother, which he didn't admit to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second thing was that I think he was jealous of my affection for her.
Because you lived with her and all.
Well, because I was very, very close to my grandmother. We were extremely good kids. And I think he was well aware that she had much more influence than he did. Which was a very natural thing. It was very natural for a child, an adolescent child, who was at odds. They're usually at odds with their parents in certain circumstances. In our particular circumstances, it was not the best, it was the worst. And to whom would I go but to my grandmother, so I think he resented this. Without realizing it. At any rate, he could get very angry sometimes. He was always my stupid. But there was that suppressed anger. Yet, at the end, when she died, he was very touched. And he said, she had such a good mind. And she had a wonderful life. And she had such wonderful things. Isn't it too bad that we never could get along?
Too late.
But in any event, this was in Kansas, and then later, when they held the Julius thing, broke out. We went back to St. Louis, where my father played the shoe. Father loved to play the shoe there, so for about a year. Then we moved down to Mount Hope Cooperative Colony.
Where is that?
Louisiana.
What's the name of it?
Yano, L-L-A-N-O.
I know, I never heard of that.
It was a cooperative colony which was started by Joe Harriman.
Oh.
Joe Harriman came of a very well-to-do family. He belonged to more or less to Scott Perry and Sinclair Hill.
He was from California, wasn't he?
I think originally from the East. He may have been from California, I don't know. In any event, Joe Harriman had the idea that we had to get back to a cooperative way of life. And the Yama Cooperative Colony was the corporation in which people invested money. He also had raised a lot of money for it, but they invested money in accordance with their needs. And became a part of the colony in which it was really communism. No one said so, but that's really what it was supposed to be. They would all work together, and they would all share together in the fruits of their labor.
What did they work on? I mean, was it a farming thing?
It was a farming thing in California, in the San Joaquin Valley. And why they moved to Louisiana, I don't know. But in any event, they moved back in baggage and bought an old sawmill, the whole town, including the sawmill, the brick mill, and all of the houses around it, and farmland, and they had other farmland, rice land. So they had this colony with other things.
And they were all
industries.
Yeah.
The sawmill, the brick mill, the hotel where everybody was supposed to eat, the farms, the dairy, the commissary, the school, the kindergarten, and so forth. Well, of course, this was the thing that completely soured me on the idea of socialism and communism.
How old were you then?
I was old enough. I was 16, 17. Because I saw precisely what happened in this colony. Joe Harriman, who was an idealist, was sick and not there. And the management fell into the hands of this really quite mediocre, opportunistic manager, Pickett.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately there became factions,
mm-hmm.
Pickett and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
The power concentrated there. Now the people who, of course, what my parents brought in, were the Ripsaw, and also they started a college down there, Commonwealth College,
mm-hmm.
with a few professors from other universities who had the idea of having a labor college. Work 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
go to school 4 hours, earn your living.
Mm-hmm.
By contributing, which is the time
I did. Yes, I did, yeah.
Their fare was usually paid and by a labor group or their family or whatever.
So and so there were people who actually came from cities to go to the college.
Okay. And we had a cross-section.
Mm-hmm.
We had a garment worker from Boston. We had people from New York. We had people from all over.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was people, and of course, was brought in quite a group of intellectual
mm-hmm.
and idealist people who did not concern themselves with the dirty politics that was going on, you see.
No, they didn't want to be involved in it.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And in fact, somebody always had to be, they had outhouses, we had the electricity, but we didn't have plumbing. We had showers and
mm-hmm.
sort of thing, but in the houses that were not built next to the outhouses. And who was it that came to the outhouses? A very highly educated college, a former college professor.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else wanted to do the dirty work. But what I found was that Pickett
mm-hmm.
and his group actually were getting all kinds of things that aren't given at home.
Mm-hmm. Special food. Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, we sold produce.
Mm-hmm.
We never, the food situation was very bad because we didn't have meat, we didn't have milk, we didn't have eggs.
Mm, because you didn't raise it? Or because you didn't buy it?
And it was sold.
Oh.
Except for Pickett and his group. We got eggs, we got butter, we got milk.
What did everybody else eat? Just vegetables?
Well, once in a blue moon there would be some beef there when the milk now got too old.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have soybeans?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, we had regular beans. The only fat that we had, and believe it or not, they used to bring heavily for everybody was supposed to eat at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You had your house, but it was not considered the thing to cook your own meals at home. Everybody was supposed to eat with everybody else. So they had molasses also. They would have a pancake in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Margarine, no. The only fat, and if you don't have fat, you have got to have fat.
Mm-hmm.
The fat was Crisco, believe it or not. You ate Crisco on pancakes with molasses, and you didn't think it
was terrible. Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't eat it at first.
Yeah.
I just had the pancakes with molasses. But not having fat in the diet.
Mm-hmm.
You eat.
When, was this before the war or after the war?
After the war.
Mm-hmm. So what happened?
Well, they started the college, and then there was controversy between the old line colonists.
They were the people from California who'd all come together?
They were the people from California, and the new group which came in. So what happened was that the college broke away from the colony
mm-hmm.
and went up to the Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taking with them very some teachers and students, and they existed there for quite a few years.
Did your parents go with the college?
No. Yes and no. We left the colony and came up to Chicago, and that was when the famous prison reform and the name took place.
Uh-huh.
We intended to go back to the colony. But in the meantime, my parents had decided that the way to the first step in prison reform was to get the garment factory, which was in competition with free trade, of course, out of the
mm.
So they lined up, and as a matter of fact, the Union Made Garment Manufacturers Association paid my parents a salary and paid for mounting that thing,
mm-hmm.
because, of course, it was to their advantage.
Sure.
or send actually the screen maker.
Yeah.
They got 6 cents a day or something like that.
Who made all the money? The state or the people who ran the prison or what?
Politicians.
Mm-hmm.
State and manufacturers.
Yeah.
So it was working on this thing that we came up to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of tricky. And of course I've been thoroughly indoctrinated in socialism. Forget it. I've learned. That's the colony experience. And mm-hmm. I was a very mature girl in some way. I saw the human problem and I saw how it would happen.
Yeah.
It's not the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But prison reform thing, I thoroughly agree with. So I was working on it. One of the things that I was doing is talking to the labor unions and the women's party. Clarence Darrow's, the low vehicle crowd was going to want to
end up. That's been exciting for everyone.
Very exciting. Believe it or not, my mother flung the things and challenged to have them. And got a press pass going that you could have sold a press pass for $1,000.
Mm.
She said, I would like my daughter to cover this trial for my publication. So during the daytime, I was going to the low vehicle trial where Clarence Darrow, who of course was a penny his law partner, Steve Reynolds, was also there when I met him. And he knew what I was doing at night. I was going around to the labor unions and raising money for the prison reform thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Reynolds, who was a very fine trial lawyer himself, a very fine public speaker, I knew dumb nothing. I just jumped in. I didn't even know what I was going to say the first time I went out. I mean, I knew the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very friendly little group. But then I knew I was going to come up against the labor union at the very time. So my father was bringing me in a little friendlier group.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Reynolds went on one of these and sat in the back. And when I finished, he said, well, I'll tell you this about public speaking. He told you the many techniques that you use.
Mm-hmm.
You never present a question and then you get an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have stage fright, you reach over and take glasses of one and smile at everybody and you long for it. Little techniques that my parents had never thought of telling me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ever actually have stage fright, but there were times that I never used a written script at all.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve Reynolds coached me in this, and that later was very interesting because I had my treatment to Darrow. Steve Reynolds, Darrow was very
mm-hmm.
exactly what was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And not, he didn't know whether they were going to be executed,
mm-hmm.
but he knew what was going to happen to the local folks,
mm-hmm.
both of whom incidentally I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked on
it. You mean you had known them before?
I met them.
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting in a press box.
Oh.
There was no jury. And of course I was young and they were young and we were old.
How come there was no jury?
They don't feel.
Oh. Right.
There's no jury when you plead guilty, so the jury box was turned over to the press,
uh-huh.
and since I was a latecomer, I spilled over next to the counsel table. I'm sitting right next to the press, where, of course, there is conversation when things are going on, so I got to know Leopold and Loeb.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was living in his own house,
mm-hmm.
and of course, you know, Loeb's family
mm-hmm.
were intimately concerned with. So, anyway, we were in Chicago and there was the prison reform happening going on. My mother went on to New York. She wanted me to come on, and this was when my parents separated. She went on to New York and told my father that she wanted a divorce.
When did she make that tour you told me about on the phone where got captured by the American Legion? That was before this?
Oh, yes. That was from Girard.
Mm.
That was a year after she got out of prison. While they were publishing the Whipsaw. So.
That was 1921?
Turned out that I was 15 and
1921.
That was working out of Girard.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the Western.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, my mother came into New York
Yeah. And your mother stayed in New York?
She stayed in New York for two or three years.
Uh-huh.
2 years, something like that.
And you stayed forever, or?
I was in Chicago.
Oh,
I stayed in Chicago.
Oh, I see.
And then my mother, the prison reform campaign was over, they had achieved their end. And so she decided she was going to move to California to live.
Mm-hmm.
I had shakenly desperate my home for my two feathers and I had it.
Mm-hmm.
I just simply wanted to get out and do my own person.
Yeah.
If I had to scrub floors, I was not going to be able to take with yourself here, and I was not going to be able to fight for your hair.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get away from the whole situation.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite understandable.
Yeah, sure is.
So my parents were divorced.
Did you have a job then?
Oh, I got a job. Mm-hmm. Got a job working for Ben White.
Oh, not really? Well, you mean as a secretary?
I went in as a secretary. He was collecting the material for the second building. You know Ben, right?
Yeah, sure.
He was collecting the material for the second building's profession.
Uh-huh.
When he offered me a job,
mm-hmm.
It was because, of course, I was brought up writing.
Yeah.
I had been to somebody else in that was wrong. And he wanted someone who would do two things. He wanted someone who was young, who was innocent, who had empathy, and
mm-hmm.
who was right.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said that he wanted me there because he wanted the real story from the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
His entire practice was prostitutes and pimps.
He sounds like such a nut.
He was an extraordinary character. I must say that Ben was very nice to me.
Uh-huh.
He was an awful rake, and once he made sort of a little tiny pass that was not cool, but
mm-hmm.
and he's very happy about it.
Yeah, that's good.
But what he wanted me for there was to take notes.
Yeah.
To really get the real story of how, what these girls really felt, because they were lying like you.
Yeah.
He said, you're going to get all the lines first.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, when I said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want is how they really feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked there, and then one day there was but I had not, oh, he taught me to make slides and that sort of thing, but...
Did you know how to type and all that stuff, or
after a fashion,
no. Yeah, I mean, you hadn't been trained in it, but you just sort of picked it up.
In my family, my dear, you typed. You knew how to use machinery.
Yeah.
You knew how to use a camera. You knew.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh,
that's
very good. Stuff. But there was an incident that happened one day. He had a few men in his practice, and one of them, he was doing a mild potassium ammonia with irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
He was down without a nurse and a man collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben couldn't get him back, you see, because he could have been for a so I was out in the office, and he called, get the doctor next door. So I stepped in, there was no doctor next door, so I came back to the doorway and said, he's not there. So he said, can you? And I said, yes, I can. So he said, you'll have to. Well, we had to get the money back. So.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, I didn't find it traumatic.
Mm-hmm. And it was your grandmother?
Well, it was a sick man.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it was a man.
Yeah.
Exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this does make a difference, too. They were
sure.
Younger ones. But nevertheless, an adult man.
Mm-hmm.
As Ben said, that was a very, very brave thing for a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I just didn't really do it.
Uh-huh.
My only feeling was that this was a man in the very, I knew it, and he had to be.
Yeah.
And if there's something to do.
Mm-hmm.
So thereafter, I was in the office, and I prepared girls many times and so forth. I didn't treat any men after that.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't treat them either. But gosh, another doctor there.
That's good.
And then my father went back to St. Louis. My mother came to Chicago.
Uh-huh. And you stayed in Chicago?
I stayed in Chicago. I was married in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And then I came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
A marriage which did not last very long.
Mm-hmm. You had a daughter?
Mm-hmm. But that was the breakup of the family. It may have been a matter of a very short time before my parents remarried.
There's one more thing I wanted to ask, which was about your mother in the suffrage movement, whether she had a lot of contact with people like that.
As a matter of fact, and I am really sorry if you're going to use any illustrations at all, there's no process for the writing material there. My mother and Carrie Chapman Catt, Snow White, with a merry widow hat.
Do you have that?
Zero Historical Society. It was in our archives, and then when my father died, and none of us knew that my stepmother died, because they had sent a notice to my niece instead of to me.
Oh.
So we didn't discover it until a week later.
Uh-huh.
In any event, there's one picture of Carrie Chapman Catt, Snow White, and she was a tall, impressive woman, too, you know, and my mother, both in these merry widow hats with the plumes and the white suit, standing up in the tunnel of a car going down.
That's suffrage for it, it really sounds like.
You know, Joan of Arc.
And the floats and everything that you say.
Well, I suspect that Carrie Chapman Catt probably politically was a conservative person.
Yeah.
It was only on that one point that they agreed.
That was an important point.
It was an important point.
But did she feel that it was important to work for suffrage? It wasn't.
Oh, yes. Yeah. She thought it was very important to work for suffrage. Mm-hmm. Because